Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 261, recorded Monday, August 15th, 2016. Sonic Pi. Triangulation is brought to you by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TRIANGULATION for 30% off your entire order. And by Automatic, the connected car company that improves your driving and integrates your car into your digital life. For more information, visit automatic.com/twit. And enter the offer code TWIT to get 20% off your purchase, plus free shipping. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology and sit down and talk and learn. And I always look forward to Mondays because that's when I get to get my brain expanded. And I'm really thrilled to get Sam Aaron on today. You may not know the name. We've talked a little bit about his creation, his pride and joy, Sonic Pi. Sonic Pi is... well, they call it on the website the live coding music synth for everyone. Simple enough for computing and music lessons, powerful enough for professional musicians. It's also a great way to learn to code in a kind of a unique musical language. Sam, welcome to Triangulation. It's great to have you.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
Where are you now? You're in Cambridge?
I'm currently in Cambridge, England, right. Yes.
Yeah. Cambridge was also, of course, the place the Raspberry Pi began. And I think there's might be a connection given the name of your program is Sonic Pi, as in Raspberry Pi.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, both the Raspberry Pi and Sonic Pi started off in the computer laboratory at Cambridge University. After the amazing success of the Raspberry Pi, the surprising success, there was a little bit of money from the Broadcom Foundation, who make the chips for the Raspberry Pi, to look at a potential application. It's only a three-month project they were proposing that might have a way of actually achieving the charitable missions of the Raspberry Pi Foundation, which is to engage everybody in computer programming, specifically creative programming. And so for all the different reasons, that project ended up being something that I was running, which was to take music, the idea being to take music and computing and combine them together to see if we could use that to engage children and everybody with programming.
How long ago was that?
That was 2012.
Okay.
Yes.
So 4 years, fast forward 4 years. Yeah. The Raspberry Pi has gone through a number of iterations, is incredibly powerful. Yep. And we have as a free download on Mac, OS X, on Windows, on Linux, and of course Raspberry Pi, this really, really, really sweet program, Sonic Pi. And I think I didn't become aware of Sonic Pi. I think I saw a link on Hacker News maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I downloaded it. And while I'm not a musician, I just love playing with this thing. I am kind of an amateur coder. In fact, the other thing that Raspberry Pi is so good at, we've talked a lot about the idea of using the Raspberry Pi in Minecraft to learn Python. And the reason that works so well, I think, for kids, besides the fact that they're fascinated by Minecraft, is they write a piece of code and it has an action in the world of Minecraft. And it's the same here. It's not an abstract experience.
I completely agree. In fact, actually, Sonic Pi on the Raspberry Pi also has a Minecraft mode. So you can do all the stuff you're talking about in Python from the Sonic Pi environment and combine Minecraft with music. So you can almost use, you can definitely use Minecraft as a VJ sort of platform.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. Minecraft has the ability to play arbitrary music. In fact, in Minecraft, you'll find discs and record players. But I didn't realize that you could use Sonic Pi to create new music and play that
in
Minecraft.
Yes, I mean, this is specifically on the Raspberry Pi, so it's on the cut-down version of Minecraft called Minecraft Pi.
Right.
So it's not on the full-fledged Minecraft. But still, you can still sort of fly Steve around, change his location, add blocks in the world. I mean, I've written articles for the Magpie magazine, which is the official Raspberry Pi Foundation magazine, which shows people how to essentially use Minecraft as a VJ platform. So getting sort of sand falling and, in time and correlation to the music.
That's really better than a light show. So I could do a performance and behind me have Minecraft and the world changing.
In fact, I've done that a number of times at sort of nightclub events where I've worked with another coder who has been specifically programming the Minecraft and taking musical notes and sort of events from the music to then help shape the Minecraft world.
What a rave you could have. That's awesome. I think that's fantastic.
And the most exciting thing to me is everything I've just described is accessible to a 10-year-old child,
yes. You know,
which means pretty much everybody.
Lately, I've been telling parents when your kid asks for a computer, don't say Mac or PC. Please don't give them an iPad. Give them a Raspberry Pi.
In fact, any Linux computer, really. I mean, that's the...
But the nice thing about Raspberry Pi, as you say, it has this kind of version of Minecraft that has an API so you can write Python, so you can write, you could put the Sonic Pi on it, and it's $35.
And there's loads of resources out there to help you learn and to show you where to start. There's the Magpie magazine, as I just mentioned, that's international, and that's always got really interesting articles every month with new project ideas. And I mean, I also write a Sonic Pi article every month, so you can sort of see new exciting ways to interact with Sonic Pi just by reading that magazine.
And
so
I
think the beauty of the Raspberry Pi is that community that surrounds that one piece of hardware.
And of course, here in the States, we have Make Magazine and the whole maker movement. And that's the other thing is, you know, you give somebody an iPad. Well, there's some great stuff you can do with it, but it's very constrained. With a Raspberry Pi, sure, they could do this. They could learn Linux. They could build something. It's kind of this open platform that I really like that notion. I think that's fantastic.
The building thing, the power of that particularly comes from the fact that the Raspberry Pi exposes those GPIO pins.
Right.
So you can plug in all sorts of cool sensors and lights to control the real world and to get information from and back into the real world. And the Raspberry Pi makes that really, really accessible and simple relative to a PC, which doesn't really sort of allow you to do that kind of interaction with the real world.
So you could you hook up a synthesizer to a Raspberry Pi or a keyboard, not a synthesizer, but a keyboard to the Raspberry Pi and then use a Sonic Pi with that?
Yeah, I mean, for that, you would specifically use MIDI, right?
So there's any MIDI controller would work.
Simple thing, yes. Yeah. And I'm working on, so if you wanted to hook MIDI into Sonic Pi right now, it's non-trivial. You've got to do a bit of programming. So when I say non-trivial from a Sonic Pi perspective, I mean it's not something that a 10-year-old child can.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So I'm really lowering that sort of the barrier. So you can definitely plug MIDI into Sonic Pi if you know a bit of programming, of course. But I'm working on specifically working on MIDI support for Sonic Pi, which makes it really, really simple. And that'll be there in a few months. And similarly, I'm working on support for the GPIO pins. So you'll be able to plug sensors in and have the data of that sensor be able to be read and interpreted and affect the music you're making.
That is
so essentially be able to use a Raspberry Pi to build an instrument that allows you to use your physical presence.
That is amazing. Oh, what a great goal. So what you said at first, it was just a kind of a 3-month grant. Obviously, that was 4 years ago. Something has happened.
A 3-month grant already was a bit of a joke in many ways, because when I signed up to the project, I thought, so naively, that they wanted me to build something which potentially could be used as a prototype, right? That 3 months is not a very long time.
Yeah.
Maybe we could get some ideas and see if those ideas fly, and then we could potentially spend more time and flesh it out. Or if it didn't work out, it obviously doesn't work out.
Right.
But actually, when it went for the first meeting, they wanted me to design a full platform that could be used in schools, to have it engineered so that it could be usable by children, to find a teacher, work with a teacher, write a scheme of work, teach a scheme of work, and evaluate all of that.
You could do that in three months, right? 90 days.
Yeah, I did it.
You did it?
Yeah, you did it? It was nuts. Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Which also drove the simplicity of the system, right? Because I essentially had 2 weeks to build the first iteration.
Right.
And that was something which basically made some beeps and allowed you to wait between the beeps. So in Sonic Pi, you've got two commands, play, and play accepts a number, which is a MIDI number. So play 70 plays a note, and 75 plays a note sort of 5 semitones higher. And then you can type in sleep and wait for some seconds and then play the next note. And so my thinking was just around those two commands. It's kind of like taking the ideas from Logo, Seymour Papert's work, but instead of saying pen up, pen down, forwards, rotate, you just want play and sleep, and you have access to most of Western music. So the first version, wow. Which is crazy, right? So the first version just focused around those two commands and then adding sort of computer science around that. So iteration and conditionals and functions. And so you could imagine then just with a couple of functions and inside those function definitions, play and sleep, you're able to write melody and verse, for example, and then combine the two. So you've already, just with play and sleep, you've access to teaching a lot of the core computer science concepts.
Wow, that is, yeah. Does the Pi have a sound generation chip? What kind of hardware support do you have in the Raspberry Pi?
So what we're using for the sound synthesis is something called SuperCollider, which is an open source sound synthesizer. It's absolutely amazing. And it's all runs on the CPU, so it doesn't
it's
really
all
rely
software.
On it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But it was written 15 years ago for the hardware then. So it flies on current hardware. So we're using that for all the synthesis. So it's just using the CPU.
That's really kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be kind of fun if you could teach me.
Sure.
I'm not a musician.
This is the thing, right? Why do people? I'm going to challenge you here, right? I often talk to people and say, "Oh, I'm not a programmer. Oh, I'm not a musician." And it's like, what does that matter? Really? I think the better question is, are you interested?
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. That's it. That's all you need to know. And then off we go and we'll do whatever it is we're doing, whether it's music or computer science or flying kites. To me, that's the more interesting question. And if someone doesn't know something, that shouldn't be something you have to claim or
right.
as a barrier to entry.
Right.
It should be an opportunity.
I love that. In fact, it's been a frustration for me because I love music and I wish I could make music.
Right.
You know, and when I was a kid, I tried to learn the guitar and my fingers hurt and I just didn't do it. And I think there's probably a lot of people like me who are frustrated musicians or just love music and would love to be able to kind of participate in some way. So this will help me do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you're talking to it in that kind of level, I think that what you're doing is describing, maybe it's like saying there is a perfect instrument for everybody out there somewhere. You just haven't found your instrument, right? So people will try trumpet or try guitar or try piano or go through different instruments.
Right.
Some people enjoy synthesizers, analog synthesizers,
yeah.
The whole renaissance of these Eurorack modules, which are amazing. But for some people, maybe code is the right instrument, right? And so for you, maybe that's the case, maybe it's not. So that's why I suggest people have a try, and if they really enjoy it, then they found their instrument. If not, then try a guitar.
So, that begs the question, I think I know what your answer is going to be, is this a musical instrument or a platform to learn coding?
It depends who you are and your questions and your expectations.
It could be both, in other words.
Context in which you're working. So,
yeah.
It can totally be used and is used in schools around the world just purely to teach computer science, and the music is used as a means of engaging the school
right.
children
right.
in the subject. But of course, it has been used, and I use it around the world as a performance tool where I actually do perform in nightclubs and have performed in international music festivals using Sonic Pi as my main instrument. So it's also an instrument as well.
Wow.
Yes.
It's both.
Yes. And I mean, it's also important to point out that code itself has been used for many years as a musical instrument. There's a whole set of different programming languages out there. There's an international organization of live coders called TopLap, which people should check out if they want to see sort of a more diverse range of different pieces of software to enable them to use code in a variety of different ways to make music. But Sonic Pi's particular claim is that it makes it as simple as possible and really tries to lower that barrier to entry for everybody.
Well, when we come back, I think it's time to dig in and
sure.
do some Sonic Pi-ing. is there a
live coding, we call it.
Live coding. Okay.
So there's two ways of working with Sonic Pi. One is composition. You write some code
yeah.
and then you press run and you hear it.
Okay.
The other one is you get the code to be doing things and then you modify it on the fly.
Oh, interesting. Now, you used yeah. Ruby to write this, and that's one of the advantages of Ruby on Rails is the ability to modify a running program in process.
Yes.
Oh,
which
this is cool.
comes from its Lisp heritage in many ways
right,
as well.
Right, right. Yes. I love
functional. Ideally, I would be teaching Lisp. I'm totally a Lisp programmer by heart, but Ruby's the best language I can use in a school context.
I knew I liked you for a reason. I'm all about functional programming. You know, every year in January, I try to get through SICP and how to design programs every year. I'm up to about chapter four in each of them, but I love it. And, you know, I've gone through, the seasoned Lisper and all that. I guess they call it schemer now, but,
so by heart, I'm a Clojure programmer.
Yeah. Clojure's interesting because that's a functional programming language that compiles to Java. So you get all the benefits of a Java environment and library, but it's functional. I've also dabbled with Clojure. I love Clojure.
Yeah, and so in Sonic Pi, there are many ideas which I've just stolen immediately from Clojure, which
are interesting. That's really good. So you're sneakily teaching kids functional programming.
Yeah, immutable data structures and concurrency are the sort of the two main things that Sonic Pi sneaks in.
Nice. Well, we'll talk about that and what that all means, too, in just a little bit. But first, a word from our sponsor. If you ever lose things, you need this. This is the tracker. And this is the coolest thing ever. I've got a tracker on my keys. You might want to put it on your remote control or your doggy, or because it's little. It's just this little anodized quarter-sized device that it has Bluetooth LE built into it. So you could pair it with your iOS or Android device. You'll get a map of where your stuff is. And if you leave it behind, it's kind of cool. You could just say, where did you last see this? It's two-way. So if you look closely at the tracker itself, you'll see there's a little button on it right here on the bottom. This is my personalized tracker. I'll explain how you get one of those. But there's a little button on the bottom, and this will make your phone scream in any sound you want. You could write your own Sonic Pi sound. Help me. But that's the beauty of this, a two-way tracking device. It will pair to your phone. You attach it to any item. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute, Bluetooth, Leo, that has a limited range. You're right, 100 feet. But here's the coolest thing ever, and Tracker really pioneered this. They have the largest crowd GPS network in the world. 1.5 million trackers out there. Here's a map, by the way, of all the trackers out there, at least in the U.S. They're all over the world, of course. And if you lose your item, let's say you leave your items at a casino in Las Vegas, and then you go home to San Francisco. Not saying this has ever happened to me, but let's say it did. Then anybody with the tracker software running on their phone that walks by your keys, the keys go, help me. And the phone notes the last location, automatically notifies the tracker network, which tells your phone, hey, we just saw your keys in Las Vegas. So it's kind of a crowdsourced network to find your stuff. That is so awesome. It also works with a Tracker Atlas. This is something they created that works with a Tracker Bravo. That's what I have here, this little quarter-sized item. Or any third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a floor plan of your house. So you can customize the floor plan. And so now you not only know that the keys, you left the keys at home, you'll know they're on the cushion of the sofa or the remote control or Fido. You just ask Tracker Atlas where your item is. Is such a great idea. And because the tracker has Bluetooth LE, it lasts for a whole year. And don't think you have to throw it out at the end of the year. That would be terrible. You just put a new one of those new, those coin-sized lithium batteries in here, and you get another year out of it. And another year and another year. Here's the deal. Go to THE. The website's the hardest part about this whole thing, finding the website. THETRACKR.com. See, no E at the end there. It's just the tracker. THETRACKR.com. And you'll get a special deal just for Triangulation listeners. 30% off your entire order, including, as I mentioned, they now have these special customized. You can engrave the tracker because they're anodized aluminum, but now they also have these customized printed trackers. And so you could have all sorts of stuff on here. They sent me this one with my face on it. You can have your face. THETRACKR.com. Don't forget the promo code Triangulation for 30% off your entire tracker order. Truly, truly the way not to lose stuff. Our guest, we don't want to lose this guy. He's a treasure. Sam Aaron. He's the creator of Sonic Pi. And let me show you, just before we kind of do this in the real world, there's a lot of video on YouTube of you performing, of you working. Here's a live coding session with music included. Sam, you're writing this and playing it. at the same time. I think you are. It says Sam Aaron live coding with Sonic.
There we are,
5.
Yes. My previous long time ago. That's actually on the Raspberry Pi itself.
It's kind
live.
Of amazing what you can do. And so this is, you know what, this, you can't read the code very well on YouTube. So let's do this for real. I'm gonna stop the YouTube. I'm gonna fire up Sonic Pi. I'm running this on a Mac, but as you mentioned, runs on anything really. I mean, it's I guess totally portable code, right? Here's the interface, and it looks, if you've ever programmed, like an IDE. So it's kind of cool. So where should help? There's a tutorial that you can get started with, like Welcome to Sonic Pi tutorial, and I can make that.
Yeah, that's the place I would first get everyone to get started with, yeah. Just to work through that tutorial. And it was written specifically for children and adults who know nothing about programming or music. So if you know something about either of those things, you should be able to fly through. If not, it should be a nice, simple trajectory.
Yeah, I like it.
And the promise I give to people who try to work through this tutorial is that if you don't understand something in there, then that's my fault, not yours. And I've not written the tutorial in a nice enough way. So if you could help me out by telling me that, Sam, I tried to read section 3.7 and it didn't make any sense to me, then I'll do my best to fix it for the next person.
And this tutorial gets you all the way. I mean, this you even have become a Minecraft VJ in the tutorial. So,
yes. So all the magazine articles for the Magpie are in the appendix at the bottom of that tutorial. Yeah.
Oh, that's really nice. All right. So that's the pane at the bottom here. I'm going to put down the lower third. So that's this pane in the bottom. In the left is the index.
And you can toggle that with Meta I, which on the Mac is Command I, and on Linux and Windows is Alt I.
So that will disappear it if you don't exactly, once you go through it. But there's other things in this window. I mean, there's example code which you can implement, just cut and paste and put in the player. There's a list of synths, effects, and samples, and there's a complete language reference too. So it's all kind of here in this tutorial section, but we're gonna minimize that right now and look at these two panes. So on the left here, this is my coding area.
Yeah, precisely.
And it's a REPL in a way, right? I mean, it acts immediately.
Yeah, loosely it's a REPL that has sort of concurrency built in. So every time you press the run button, it will create a new thread of execution and execute or eval the code in that buffer. But it won't stop any previous code, which still happens to be running, from running. It layers it on top.
Oh, so that's nice. So we could do multiple musical lines this box without creating a new batch of code.
Yeah, I mean, there's two main ways of treating Sonic Pi as a musical instrument. The first way is to, which is a simple way, is to write a simple line of code which lasts for a long time, and then to run it, and then whilst that's still running, to modify it and then run it again so it layers itself on top of what's currently there. So that sort of allows you to do layer sounds and build up a larger sound. And then the other way is to use what we call live loops, which run the code round and round in circles, and each live loop is a separate thread. And then whilst they're running, you can modify those things, change their behavior. So you could have one live loop playing the bass, one playing the drums, playing at the same time, and then if you wanted to change the drums to do a solo, you modify this code, and next time round, it then changes. But this, the bass is still running round. So they're the two main things. So if we're going to have a go now, perhaps we should do the first kind, which is the layering kind, just to get a feel for it.
Before we do, the chat room's saying, it's too bright, it's too bright, it's hurting my eyes. We have a bunch of people who live in the cellars watching the show. So I'm going to go into the preferences. You'll see we can modify the editor, we can modify the studio. There's performance and updates. But I'm going to click dark mode right now. Now you're happy, right, helpless corgis? No, bright sunlight pervading your hidden darkness. Ah.
And we built this specifically for... So Joseph Wilkes did the work for that dark mode. And that was in response to me giving a performance in Germany and them saying, this is going to be great in nightclubs, but Sam, man, it's too white.
It's too white,
man. Make it dark. Yeah, yeah. So that is actually the nightclub mode. Venues where you want to maintain sort of a darker atmos.
I love this.
Yeah.
So tell me where to start here. What should I... before you do that, let me ask what this right column is. There's some stuff in here because I was playing music earlier. What is this... Here.
So that's the log, right? It's still white because of the previous preferences. But if you press run again, it will just clear off and be nice and dark.
All right, let's clear it out. All right.
So you can see if you press run with an empty buffer, it starts that run. There's nothing to do, so it finishes it.
Gotcha.
And each run is incrementally, it has an integer ID. So if you press it again, you'll get run 3 and run 4, et cetera, et cetera.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so every time you press run, that run 4 is an independent thread of execution. So if
I put a loop in there, it would continue even when I ran something else.
Yes. We can try that if you want now.
Whatever you... You know what? You're the teacher. I'm your somewhat slow...
Well, let's just start with the absolute basics just to get started, to show people how simple it is to get started. So to do pretty much all of music, you just need two commands. And that's play and sleep. So if you type in play...
Yeah. And by the way, I love this code picker. Will allow me to autocomplete. So this is... You couldn't make it easier.
Yeah, and in fact, actually, at this point, probably it's worth pointing out a tip that most people don't know, even sort of a lot of seasoned Sonic Pi users. If you put the cursor over the word play, so make the pink bar thing go somewhere in between one of the letters, that's right, and do Control-I.
Control-I. Oh, then pops up, it pops up the reference.
Exactly, for that function, play. And so you can scroll down there and you can actually see what that function does. And you can start to see some examples of its use at the bottom of that. If you scroll to the bottom of that help pane.
Took me 3 weeks to get Emacs to do this with SBCL. So this is very handy. Trust me. You will want this. All right. So play, and now what should I say?
So we need to understand what numbers are good, and I'll just tell you, just cheat by saying numbers between sort of 40 and 100 are good. So something like 60 might be a good place to start.
Okay. Is that hertz? It's not something that we would normally think.
These are MIDI notes.
Okay.
So if you run now, you'll hear a note.
Okay.
MIDI maps onto the notes on a piano.
It's got a little sustain on it, too. I mean, it's just kind of a nice little synth note. Okay.
So by default, there was an ADSR, attack, decay, sustain, release envelope on every synthesizer. Mm-hmm. And the defaults are to have the attack, decay, and sustain time to be 0. And the release time to be 1 beat, which by default is 1 second. But you can change the BPM, which also modifies the ADSR, the envelope times.
So everything is programmable here.
Advanced detail there already with this one play command. But you don't need to know about that, just to make a little simple leap.
Right.
Yeah. And at this point, you might ask, well, what is 60, right? So like you're asking about hertz or units. The simplest way to think about it is it's just a note on a piano, one of the notes on the piano. You don't need to know which one it is. We can go into the music theory later if you want to. But what's really important at this stage is just people know that musical notes have a similar property to numbers in that numbers can go up and then go down, and notes can also go up and down, right? So if you were to choose a higher note there, like 65 or 70, then you're going to get a higher number, higher notes.
And that's, by the way, what's great about this. The first thing a kid's going to do is say, well, what happens with this number? What happens with that number? And they're going to try things, and they just try it. Oh, but they're playing at the same time.
Yeah, what did you expect that to do?
I thought it might play one and then the next one.
Yeah, so this appeals perhaps to your understanding of programming in a way that allows you to communicate and express the speed of computers. So in the early versions of Sonic Pi, it did play 60 and then play 70, but so incredibly quickly that you couldn't really hear. And that allows you to explain to children and everybody that computers, they actually operate at a very fast speed.
Oh.
And so, though it is playing 60, then 70, it's doing so quickly, you can't really tell. However, in the later version, since Sonic Pi 2, there is some fancy timing system underneath the hood, which means that really does, in a sample-accurate way, play exactly at the same time. Which is really important for some sort of professional effects that we might get to later on.
Sure. So, but the difference would be determined by determined by the power of the computer and how many cycles.
Precisely. Yeah.
So it was unpredictable, in other words.
You might be able to hear that difference. But now it really is playing at the same time. And this is important because when we start to talk about music, time is actually a really fundamental aspect. And this isn't something that programming languages typically tackle or care about. Programming languages typically care about doing A before C and not start, or A before B before C, and not starting C until B and A are done, right? We need to do those first and then we can move on. And so that means if we have a faster computer, we get to do the work faster. And if we have a slower computer, do it slowly. But we always do it in the correct order. But with music, we don't just care about the order of the execution. We also care about when things happen. If I have a beat that's happening, if I buy a faster computer, I don't want that beat to go faster or slower. I want it to be the same. And so we have to really think carefully about what time means and from a programming language concept to get this stuff to work.
What I love about this is that was a lot of words to explain something that a kid can have an experience of and internalize without any words at all. They can,
yes, exactly.
They can get
yes.
it. And that's yes. so powerful. And sometimes people say, well, why should I learn to code or why should a kid learn to code? Well, even if they're never going to be a coder, there are lots of reasons. It's certainly a fun thing to learn. But even if they never get to be a coder, what they do get is kind of a experiential grasp of what's going on in a computing system. And I think that's very, very valuable. It helps you understand why things don't work.
In so many ways, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And especially if that fundamental experience of code is rooted in a creative context.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because we're all told we need to learn to program because we can get a job as a programmer.
Yeah, that's not
and
fun.
In many ways, that has some truth to it.
Yeah.
However, that's kind of like saying we all need to learn English so that we could write legal documents.
Right.
And that would be quite a tragic world to live in, wouldn't it, if we couldn't use English to write poems or letters or to-do lists or all the wonderful things we use the languages, our written languages of whatever kind all around the world we use them for. It's much more than for specific business purposes.
You bet.
And code is just the same. Code is not just for business.
No.
It's for us to express ourselves in new ways. And I think that live coding music is one of these fabulous new ways that we're learning to express ourselves with it.
Technology is
really
not just for business. Yeah, I mean, when we first started doing computer television programming almost 20 years ago, I had to explain that there are two kinds of people. There are people who first encountered technology and computers at work and think of it as a tool for work, and then there's the people who encountered it at home and for fun and think of it as a great toy. And those are two very different perspectives on really the same thing, and it is a better way to learn. If you think of it as fun and interesting, you're much more likely
Absolutely.
To enjoy
yes.
it. I learned Latin. You could make the argument that you learned Latin so you could be a lawyer, but it was the best thing I ever learned because it helped me understand languages, and
yes.
it was a very useful tool. And I've never spoken to one person in Latin.
Caecilius est in cocos.
Very nice. Yeah, you and I now. Hic haec hoc. Hui. Omnes Gallia. That's not real. The reason you learn it is because it's a root of all romance languages, and so it's such a valuable tool. And so this is okay. Enough.
There's another reason as well, which
yes.
I think that most people haven't probably thought about, which is that briefly touched on the fact that that tools like Sonic Pi, live coding tools, allow code to be a new kind of musical instrument, which means that there are people around the world now going to performances and gigs where the musician is using code as
right.
an interface.
Right.
However, if the audience has no clue about code,
right.
and no clue about what the performer's doing, it makes them very hard to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And the one way to think about that is imagine going to a Jimi Hendrix concert. I mean, that'd be amazing if you could. But imagine going to one if you've never, ever seen a guitar before.
Right.
And what would you make of that concert? Why is Jimmy wearing that big wooden medallion? Like, what is it for? Like, why is he touching it? What are those? Why is his fingers moving quickly? Like, if we all appreciate rock music and guitar music because we've all held a guitar.
Right.
Similarly, we've all hit drums with sticks.
Right.
And so we can appreciate the virtuosity of a drummer playing on stage. And so we all need to have had some kind of experience making music with code or being creative with code for us to then really get the full benefit of going to see a live coded performance.
Very interesting.
In a music concert.
And most DJs, by the way, and if you go see, you know, Deadmau5, that's code.
Kind of, but a lot of those performances, it's code which has been written. It's kind of like traditional code.
Right.
In the sense that you will write your app in your
you
programming
yeah.
environment.
Yeah.
Then you run. Exactly.
But I remember talking to Brian Eno, who was a master of programming. Brian Eno, of all things,
yeah.
thought of himself as more of a... He said, I think of it very visually. I don't think of music as a sound. I think of it as... He didn't say this, but I would say math. But he sees it visually on these staves. And I think that's exactly it. It was very helpful to understand his kind of music. All right. So now the 10-year-old in me, and all the 10-year-olds watching are saying, enough, why do these grown-ups talk so much? Let's make some more music.
Right, so we need one more command, right? So
okay.
If you just write loads of plays, they will all play at the same time. That's the rule, okay. Right? So if you don't talk about time in Sonic Pi, it does everything at the same time.
Right.
So if you write... So this is how to do chords. So if you want to make a melody, you need to learn the sleep command, which you can write just in the same way as play, and that will make the computer pause for that number of seconds by default.
So it's often you'd use
if I sleep
a fraction.
For 1 second, say.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do 0.3, whatever number you want, really. These are seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's pausing it. Now, if I run now, I know what's going to happen. All three of those notes are going to play it at once and then nothing for 0.3 seconds.
Which is essentially like not...
Yeah. But I made, I made a chord.
That's another play.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you write another play at line five...
Okay.
Right.
Now let's try
play the first three notes, wait for 0.3 seconds, and then play note 90. So if you increase that 0.3 to 1, say... be able to hear a much bigger delay.
Nice.
Okay.
So by the way, we should just for the musicians who are going crazy. 60 is middle C, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's one. The reason why we don't really talk about letters, like in a music sense, is that is a barrier to entry. And
right.
if people
right.
don't know about musical notes,
right.
and then you say, well, you need to play an A, then C, they immediately feel like they don't know what they're doing, and there's a lack of confidence there.
Right.
Whereas if you talk about numbers, you can say everyone knows numbers go up and go down, so that's just a much more familiar and friendly environment to be in. But of course, some of people will want to use their musical knowledge if they have it. So yes, we need to know that this number C, 60 maps onto a note on the piano. But you can also write a colon there instead of 60.
Okay.
And then just write C. So colon C.
Okay. So like this, C...
Yep, and just press run.
Let's delete these and see if we get a C. Oh, we do. Yeah. Very nice.
And then that's, I think, by default, octave four. So if you say C3, that will go an octave lower.
So I'll do C3.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can choose the octave by adding that number on if you want to.
Okay.
Nice. If you want a C sharp, CS. If you want a C flat, it's CB.
Oh, yeah, very sharp.
So this is there for those people who want to take their music knowledge and use it.
Oh, this is cool.
Not essential to know these things.
Yeah.
No.
Well, in fact, I like the idea of a number because I think as a child, I might then play with different numbers, start to see relationships, and may even be able to figure out kind of how the music works a little bit.
Like octaves, for example.
Yeah.
Do you know how many numbers you need to add to make an octave?
Yeah. How many?
12.
So if I play 72...
Well, actually, what's more fun is if you delete that and change it to 60.
Yeah.
And then do a plus 12.
Oh.
You can do some math right in there if you want to.
Oh. And I... Ooh, nice.
Now you have an octave.
Yeah.
So you don't just have to put numbers in. You can put any arbitrary sort of algebra in there if you wanted to.
Got it. And no parentheses yet.
Five. Yeah, if you wanted to, right? But
yeah.
So you can do some basic algebra there.
Nice.
You don't just have to put a number.
Okay.
Because this is just a standard programming language, and that completely makes sense in any programming environment to be able to add two numbers together.
Right. So I've got two commands. I've got play and I've got sleep, and that's really the entire canon of Western music.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Can't be expressed. Well, I think, you know, I could do Switched on Bach. You know, when I was growing up, we loved Wendy Carlos Williams in the earliest synthesizer record I can remember of her playing Switched, you know, Bach cantatas, or I guess it was the Brandenburg concertos. And it sounded like that. It wouldn't be so hard to do that with this.
I know.
Yeah.
Should we do something a bit more interesting?
Well, why not? We're talking to Sam Aaron. He's the creator of Sonic Pi. This is free. You can download it from sonic-pi.net, Windows, Mac, Linux, even Raspberry Pi. In fact, it was written for the Raspberry Pi originally. And it's absolutely free, open source. It's on GitHub if you want to look at the source code, written in Ruby. Okay, I just wanted to let people know if they're just tuning in what we're doing.
Of course, yeah.
So what's next?
So the next thing is that, there's two more things that come out of this. Next is that the basic sound we're hearing there is a sine wave, so it's a pretty basic sound.
Yeah.
So we can change that sound to any of the pre-built-in synthesizers with one more command, which is use_synth.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that. So we don't have to just stick with that simple beep. We can also change its duration by using the release and attack times. And these things are all in the tutorial. There we are. So if you press space, you can see the different synthesizers.
Oh, and that it even shows you, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you say click on growl or FM or something,
and then,
if you do the Control-I trick on growl, you'll be able to see that.
Oh yeah.
So if you put the cursor in the growl,
and then there's the, and this actually shows all the things. So I can use any of these options as. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to pull down your lower third. I can use any of these options here.
Yes. So when you go to a music shop and you see all the synthesizers, these are boxes with many, many different knobs on you can tweak and change to modify the sounds. So although here we're just seeing play 60, 60 is just one of the knobs. It's the notes knob. It's the control for changing the pitch. But each synthesizer comes with a variety of different controls which can allow you to change the timbre, the sound of the sound, in really sort of powerful ways.
So let me just
that documentation shows you.
I'm going to experiment. Let's play 60 with the sine wave and then with the growl. Ooh. How fun. All right, now I'm having fun.
Add a comma after 60 and change and use the release option, you can change how long that note lasts for example.
Oh, okay. So comma, release.
Yeah,
colon. And then it's going to suggest...
And then
I don't
4 seconds, say.
All right. So make a long sustain, huh? Let's try that.
Yeah.
Ooh. You could see immediately how a kid would just love this and not having any experience in coding or synthesis or music. It's just making really neat stuff.
And just with these two commands, you have the ability to modify the sounds with that kind of the dot release, so the comma release.
Yeah.
You have a huge amount of sort of sonic possibilities. But there are two more sort of powerful tools to learn to give you, in terms of the sound creation, that can give you really a fabulous palette. So the first of those two things is the fact that you can also play any pre-recorded sound. So you can take your iPhone or your Android phone or your tape recorder, if you're from the 80s, and go and record some sounds in the streets or in the forests, and then you can play those back in Sonic Pi. Access to it's built in.
How do I get them into the Sonic Pi interface?
So we already have a bunch of samples built in for you. So that's
so
you have play, you've got sleep, you've also got sample. So if you type in sample and press space, you'll see the list of all the pre-built in sounds.
Oh, all of these, and there's dozens and dozens of these that go on.
It's about 70 of them.
Let me show you.
Because it's Ruby, we're using what we call a symbol to specify these things. It's kind of like an immutable string, which has a unique identifier, like an enum, for example, in C.
Now, so there we are. So just putting it there, play it, or do I need to give it a play command now?
No, that's it. We'll play it. So you press the run button. They are. And it was a really fun. Excited.
I'm sorry. I'll calm down.
Have you just checked the roof first before you bounce out? Because the next thing you need to learn is the comma rate option.
Okay.
So if you put comma rate colon.
After vinyl rewind, comma rate. And then I can choose.
So one is the default, is what you just heard. But if you do 0.5,
speed it up.
Play it at half speed. Oh. Yeah.
Or half speed. Well, let's see.
Half speed.
The beauty of this is you can try it.
You've got no idea. Just press play.
Oh, I love it.
Let's try like 0.25 for quarter speed.
All right. Even slower. Even slower. Wow. All right. Let's see. Can I play it backwards?
Minus. So if you use a rate which is a minus value, it'll be backwards. So if you do minus, that'll be backwards at a quarter speed.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
Oh, man. Oh, baby, here we go. What a great toy. You just invented the best thing ever.
This is just a basic sampler from the 80s. I mean, that's what all early hip-hop musicians are using. But it's free now.
Are any professional musicians using this?
I don't think so yet. But it'd be hard to imagine them not using live coding techniques in the future.
I presume, of course, they go out and they buy Logic or whatever, tools they're using, that they have ways of doing this. But it's not by typing. It's with buttons and knobs and things, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think what's important to think about is that the tools that the current electronic musicians use today, by and large, are tools that are studio tools. So they're still tools to help them in their experimental and compositional stages as they're sort of preparing their piece, and then tools to help them polish that piece so that when they present it as a WAV file and upload it to Spotify or whatever, that they have a beautiful piece of music that they're releasing. And so this, for every 1 second of audio in that final track, there are many hours or days of work that's gone into that time.
Yes.
And so Sonic Pi, so when people talk about these tools, they talk about the power of that polish or that composition, which is really important for certain kinds of music that you really do want to spend hours per second. So Sonic Pi isn't trying to do that. What Sonic Pi tries to do is to say, let's try and think about ways we can take aspects of those things, aspects of logic, and make them simple and accessible for a live situation that we're able to then modify and tweak these things in a live performance. So for every 1 second of performance, you have 1 second of time. So you therefore lose a lot of quality. It's a bit more like punk music in many senses, but you gain massively in the expression and experimentation and the ability to modify and react to what's happening right now. So when I'm performing live in front of audiences, I can watch the audience, and if they're not getting what I'm doing, I can modify it very quickly. Or if they are, I can keep it going. So I have a lot more fine-grained control of the audio than you would do with these tools in a live setting.
Wow.
But in a studio, then these tools can be much more powerful and can give you many more abilities to polish the sound. Sonic Pi is not about polish, it's about performance. If that makes sense.
Yes. Could you, though, take a Korg or some other device and hook it up to Sonic Pi and sort of give you a starting point in code? I guess that would be hard to do.
At the moment, you can do it if you know how to do a bit of programming. But in the future, we already have prototypes of this working. You'll be able to hook up any arbitrary MIDI device or any device which supports something called Open Sound Control, which is a network protocol, and have Sonic Pi control those things in a very timely way. But as with all features in Sonic Pi, the goal isn't, it's not about, can I do this? From a programming perspective, often the answer is yes, but that answer can involve some very complex or convoluted code to achieve it. With Sonic Pi, first of all, we have to say, can we do it? And the second thing is, can we imagine building in a way that a 10-year-old child would be able to learn? And that often becomes a blocker for many features. And so until I'm confident that a 10-year-old child can use this stuff, it doesn't go into Sonic Pi.
So you definitely want to keep that purpose in mind and not be seduced by professional musicians' needs.
No, but if there are opportunities to achieve both goals, then that's what I really am aiming for. And I think the sampler, for example, is exactly that. You've just seen the most basic use of sampler. You can type sample, type the name of the sample, change the rate, and you can really have a lot of fun with just those.
I can see that. Yeah, and learn a lot about sound.
It supports low-pass filters, high-pass filters. You can start and stop it at any arbitrary point. You can, in the future version, which I'm going to release in a few weeks, you can even automatically detect all the onsets. So you can take a drum loop and say, play me the third drum, and it will just find it for you and play that little bit of drum. So these are really powerful features.
Wow.
That are there, but don't interfere with that simple sort of early starting point.
Yeah. If you want to watch Sam Aaron code live, he does on livecoding.tv. He'll do, I guess, performances of him coding with Sonic Pi and performing with Sonic Pi. You've done quite a few of them, 394 to date. So you're very prolific on here. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things is that for me, because I treat code as my instrument and I really aim to be a sort of professional-style musician, if you look at professional musicians, one of the things that, regardless of which instrument they play, the one thing that they all do is practice.
Yeah.
And so I really prolifically practice my live coding because I think it's so important. And so the livecoding.tv streams are me just openly sharing those practice sessions with people. So if you tune into those things, they're not necessarily going to be performance level quality. I might be noodling around a bit. However, it's an opportunity to join in the chat room, to ask questions. I can respond. I can even respond by changing what I'm doing to help answer that question. So I really want to be able to have an active engagement with people whilst I'm making the music in those practice sessions. But they'll give you a kind of taster for the kinds of performances I'll give in a real venue.
livecoding.tv/SamAaron, A-A-R-O-N, if you'd like to watch Sam. And it looks like you go in there, you know, several times a week, so that's awesome.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's really great. Let's take a break. I want to learn a little more. play a little more with Sonic Pi. This is so much fun. It's not just for schools. It's not just for kids. It's for anybody who wants to play with music. You know, I remember when GarageBand came out, and really what a revelation that was as a way to make music. It didn't have to be great music. It was just for myself, just to play with it. And this in a way combines two of my loves, music and coding. And so I think this hits the sweet spot for me, and I imagine for quite a few of you as well. It's great great to have you on, Sam. Before we go on, though, let me talk a little bit about our sponsor for this segment of Triangulation. It's Automatic. Well, it is automatic. But what I mean is, this is the way you can connect to your car and have a quantified car. So maybe you did know this, or maybe you didn't. If you look under your steering wheel on your car, any car made since 1996, you will see something very interesting. It looks like a kind of a connector, a port. It is. It's called the OBD2 port, onboard diagnostics port, and it's mandated by law to have that on the car. Now, if you saw it, you might say, and in fact, I'll show you what it looks like because this is the other end of it. It looks just like this, and it's below your steering wheel. And if you saw that, you'd probably say to yourself, well, obviously that's for the technician at the dealership to mess with my car computer. And you'd be right, but there is much more you can do if you get this. This is an automatic dongle, Bluetooth dongle. You connect it right there. It's powered by your car, does not drain the battery, of course. It's smart enough not to do that. And once it's connected, you pair it up with your phone, and suddenly you can do so many things. I mean, there's the obvious, you know, the check engine light comes on, and you go, what the heck does that mean? And, well, you can see, but it's much, much more than that. For instance, it will give you an audio alert when you've stepped on the gas too hard or braked too hard. It helps you save gas. It helps you avoid high speeds. It helps you become a better driver. You can even, and I do this, you can look at your trip on the automatic app on your iPhone or Android phone and see how much gas you used, how much it cost you, how many hard brakes, how many steps on the gas there were. They'll even score you. I use If This Then That, because it works great with If This Then That, to save every trip I take to an Evernote page so that I have records of every trip, including a map of where I went. There's so much you can do. If you or your teenager needs help, and we all do, fighting the urge to text while driving, Automatic can set your Android phone into a Do Not Disturb mode and disable its keyboard whenever you're on the road. In fact, if you have a teenager, you really have to get the Automatic so you can keep an eye on them, you can track their moves, you can prevent their texting, and feel a lot better because Automatic has a 24/7 crash response feature that'll help keep your loved ones safe on the road. It works not only with the If This Then That, but Amazon Echo. I can actually ask Echo how much gas is in my car, and it will tell me.
I'm not sure what you meant by that question.
Well, I have an electric car. That's probably why. It does work with your electric car, by the way. You can't tell it how much gas you've used. Nest works with, so you can, for instance, on your way home, your Nest can turn up the AC or turn on the heat. It works with your mechanic. If you track business mileage for tax reasons or for reimbursement, it works with Concur and Expensify and FreshBooks. It is so cool. You can even locate your parked car with the Automatic app on your Apple Watch or your Pebble. This is an amazing thing. Every car should have this. Your car should have this. No monthly fee, no subscription. You just buy it once, plug it in, and you're good to go. Now, normally $99.95, but we've got a deal. Of course we've got a deal. I wouldn't do it if we didn't have a deal for you. If you go to automatic.com/twit, use the offer code TWIT, and you'll save 20% off the regular purchase price. That's a nice deal, and free shipping. automatic.com/twit. It's the quantified car. Every car should have one of these. You've got the port. Now get the automatic. automatic.com/twit. Sam Aaron is our guest. He is a coder, University of Cambridge researcher, and the creator of one of the most awesome tools ever. You've been on Floss Weekly as well, I think, with Randall Schwartz in the past. So
that's correct, yes.
People who've watched Floss Weekly already know about Sonic Pi, but I couldn't resist.
Actually, I was talking about something called Overtone then, which is a previous system I was working on with a friend called Jeff Rose.
What was that
based
for?
On the Clojure programming language.
Oh, nice. Was it music?
So that provided... Yeah, it's exactly the same as Sonic Pi, except for the goal wasn't to make things as simple as possible. It was to make things as powerful as possible.
Ah.
And so we wanted to make a... So Sonic Pi uses this thing called Super Collider, this really powerful synthesizer. And Sonic Pi provides simple ways to work with its power, but doesn't give you full access to it, because that's quite a complicated beast. Whereas Overtone, the Clojure environment, aims to give you full power, full access to that power.
But is it an active project? Is it still?
It doesn't have an active maintainer at the moment, but it's extremely stable, so there's many users currently using it. But unlike Sonic Pi, where you can go and just write play and make a beep, with Overtone and Super Collider as well, if you use that directly, you have to design a sound first before you can even play one. So it's quite a complicated a way of getting involved. And I used to have a band called Meta X with my brother-in-law, Jonathan Graham, and we toured quite a number of countries playing with Overtone as our performance tool. And it allowed us to demonstrate that code was creative, and we were able to give people an experience of what we were doing. But people didn't really get what we were doing, mainly because of the things we were talking about before, because people don't really get what coding is, never mind that code could be an instrument. And because things are so complicated, as most of these live coding tools are, it wasn't something that people could go home with and just play with and have a go. You've got to install this thing, you've got to install a JVM, you've got to get a compatible Clojure editor like Emacs or Vim. And suddenly your interest in what you just saw that evening turns into this complicated install process that most people aren't going to go through. So its audience is extremely small, where Sonic Pi was trying to think about how do we make this kind of music making accessible to as many people as possible.
How cool. How cool. I will also be downloading this. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if you already have a Clojure environment...
Clojure all set up, yeah.
Yeah, so then it's just a jar install and you're done.
Nice.
Okay. But for that, for most people in the streets, you can say, hey, do you want to install Clojure?
No. Especially when you say it's Clojure spelled with a J, by the way.
Is that a website? Whereas Sonic Pi, you really can just say, download the app.
Yeah.
Type in play 60, press play, and you can hear it.
Well, if you've been watching, you see how much fun I've had already. And it's a simple download.
So far you've seen play, which can give you access to the built-in synthesizers, which allows you to play any note and control them in many, many different ways. And each synthesizer is like an off-the-shelf full analog synthesizer.
Yeah.
You can use sleep to wait between triggering those notes.
Yeah.
You can use sample to access any of the built-in sounds. You could also, where you did the colon vinyl rewind, that's one of the built-in samples. But if you put a string in there with quotes and put a path to a WAV file on your file system,
It will be a WAV file. So that's how I can get in my own sounds. I can record it, save it as a WAV file, and then literally, instead of colon vinyl underscore rewind, I just do I do a colon or just a...
No, you do like the...
Just quotes. Quote, and then file, the path, end quote.
Yeah.
And it'll play that sound. And I can apply. Can I apply the rate and the decay and all of that stuff to it?
All that stuff, yeah. And if you don't put a path to a WAV file, if you put a path to a directory of WAV files, it will automatically play you the first WAV file in that directory. But after that sample path to directory, you can do a set of filters. So you can filter for substring matches or regular expression matches or indexes into there. So you can say, play me the fourth WAV file in that directory. So that's a really powerful way of using large directories of samples in a live setting. So it is, again, as I was saying before, there's lots of powerful tools in there, but they don't get in the way of that initial simple experience. But as your requirements increase, your needs increase musically, Sonic Pi hopes to answer most of your questions with, yes, of course you can do that. It's just a little bit more code.
This is... really cool. Now,
one more thing actually that Sonic Pi does that we need to discuss for Timbre, and then we've done all of those things, the things it needs.
Okay.
And that's the studio effects. So you can play sounds, you can wait between sounds, you can play samples, but you can also play a bunch of sounds through an effect like reverb or distortion. And then that's essentially like buying a guitar effects pedal and plugging into the sound into that, and then plugging the output of that into your speakers. And so the way you do that with code is we use what we call a lexical closure, which in Ruby is an anonymous function. It's a block of code which we attach to the end of a function. That's all very technical. But in terms of 10-year-old child ready, all you need to do is say with underscore effects, specify the effect, and you have do and end to say where the effect starts and end to say where the effect finishes. So you can scope the impact of that effect to a subpart of your program. So if you put the do at the end around all of your code, then it's all got that effect, or just a small part. Just have that small part will have the effect.
Well, I'm falling behind because I wanted to play a wave. So let me just play a wave real quickly. And
all we want to do is pump you up.
Now, and then I could apply to this.
Right?
Okay.
Comma rates minus one.
Rates. And
rate
minus one. Yep. Okay, that's going to slow it down, right? Let's try that.
Wait,
because it's negative. Yeah, exactly. At the normal speed. Okay. Wow. And can I? I can add all sorts of things.
If you want to add echo to that, for example, you'd put that on a new line. So you'd go to the beginning of the line.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the beginning of the line. Does Control E work? Control A works. Yes, it does.
Like Emacs
commands. Yeah. Bravo. Okay,
Control A, Control E, Control T. All those things work.
Nice.
If you press Enter now to put that on the line 2, and then go up to line 1, Control P if you want to do these things,
okay.
And then with underscore FX.
Okay, and again, it's going to give me the. I know
space.
I typed this right. Yep.
And then you can choose your effect.
Oh,
so Echo might be a good one to choose because it's quite easy to hear.
Okay.
That's it. And then space.
Yep.
And then you need to say do where you want the echo to start.
So I want to make a loop here.
And end where you want it to end. So this is what we call a lexical closure. It's not, nothing is repeating. It's just saying that this is a box around the sample call, and that box is going to apply echo.
So let's.
And you can put any code you want to in between the do and the end, so as many lines as you want.
Let's just try it here.
All we want to do is.
Oh, boy.
There we go. And again, just like the effect, so the synthesizers, you have, if you do the Control I trick on Echo, so if you put the cursor over the word Echo,
let me go back to the screen, Control I, Echo, on
hit Control I, and then
it
pops up the documentation, and you can see the options. So, for example,
phase.
Is the delay between the echoes. You can choose how long the echo takes to fade out.
So would I do comma, colon, phase?
Phase, colon, so the colon goes to the end of the options.
Okay, phase, colon, and then say point.
0.125 per second.
Okay. So that's going to add a phase to this.
So it's going to, what that's saying is that it's going to be an eighth of a second between each echo.
Ah. Well, I wonder what that's going to sound like.
All we want to do is you are.
Yeah. If you go to, say, to 0.5, then that will be a much longer distance of time.
So I'm making the room longer, basically.
All we want to do is pump you up.
Oh, man.
And then you can also nest effects. So you can say, after echo, I want to add some reverb.
Yeah.
So, again, if you go to line 1 and then press Enter to clear that up, so Control A,
I'll put this inside the do loop.
So you choose which order you want it in. So it goes from inside out, like in Lisp.
Okay.
And so if you want it to go through echo, then reverb, the echo needs to be inside of reverb. If you want it to go through reverb, then echo, needs to be inside of echo.
So you get to choose. I could move this inside the do loop, for instance.
So you just need to add another line. So, just with underscore effects reverb.
All right. Okay, I'm glad it's auto completing.
And space.
Yep.
And then do, and then you just
say putting another do loop here. Got it.
Yes.
Do another one.
Yeah, these are called closures. They're just descriptions of where a bit of code starts and stops.
So
they actually map onto anonymous functions. Yeah. So there we are. So now he's saying play the sample through reverb and then the reverb through echo.
So you've just taught me lambda. The lambda.
You are.
And that's how I feel.
You change that to distortion or big crusher, and then you're able to really layer and create some really interesting sounds very quickly. So by using samples and synthesizers, changing the options of those things, and then passing them through a series of effects, you have an incredible amount of control over the sound which is generated.
endless fun. And we've run out of time.
We've started to talk about live coding or how you can actually have these things loop around and modify them as they're playing.
The good news is it's all in here. You go through the tutorial. It comes with synths. It comes with samples. It comes with effects. It comes with a complete tutorial, a complete language reference. It's everything you need to...
And it really is. There's schools in the UK. There's a school in Newcastle upon Tyne. And it's a primary school in the UK, so these are 10-year-old children. And once a week, they have an assembly, so all the school gets into a big room, in a big hall, and they do different performances. And one of the things that's been a regular feature of that particular school is Sonic Pi performances. And so I've seen videos of two girls practicing their performance over FaceTime. And so then they will practice over the week, and then at the end of the week, they'll give their performance to the rest of the school. And these children have predominantly taught themselves using the tutorial, and so it really is accessible to a 10-year-old.
Sam, you have made something that is destined to change the world, and I want to make sure that every single teacher and every single student and anybody who wants to play with this knows about it, because this is superb. I really, really love it.
If you're a teacher who's listening to this and you want to have a go at playing with this, obviously downloading it and just working the tutorial is a completely great way of getting started that everyone can do. But it's also be worth knowing that the Raspberry Pi Foundation offer something called PiCademy, which is a fabulous thing. It's a free teacher training that they run both in the UK and also increasingly in the States. And so that's something to Google and to figure out if that's for you, and you can sign up and see if you can get a place on these free training courses. And Sonic Pi features as a part of that. And it's really a course for any aspiring IT teacher or computing teacher to learn how they can engage children in this new curriculum and importantly, interesting ways, which is not just about what's a sorting algorithm. There we go. It's also about how do we excite these children. So Sonic Pi is a fundamental part of that program.
Yeah, and I think this is great because you really do want to rethink the curriculum and rethink how you teach and take advantage of this tool to do it in a way that the kids really get and get excited by.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that if you look at the way that we've tried, certainly in the UK, tried to find methods to which to engage children, one of the things I've seen a lot of is going to professional programmers and saying, hey, you're a professional programmer now. You obviously learned to program when you were a child. What excited you? And I think that the answer that those people are going to give is not necessarily going to be the same kind of thing that inspires everybody else. It's probably more likely to inspire similar-minded people, people who would enjoy programming for its own sake, you know, for its own internal inner beauty. Just like there are some people who enjoy mathematics for its own internal inner beauty, whereas there's lots of other people who just use maths just to do stuff. And I think that if we want to try and find ways to engage a broader audience, so people who wouldn't necessarily just see programming for its own internal inner beauty, then we need to find ways and means to engage them which apply to their current lives, which are meaningful to them in their lives. And I think music is one way of doing that.
What's next for Sonic Pi? Is it complete, or do you have some visions for additional features?
It's a really good question. I think that nothing's ever complete, is it really? Given that the goal of Sonic Pi is to try and get more people engaged and have a creative experience with the code, I think there's lots more things we can add that can increase that enjoyment, that creative power. So particularly I'm looking at tools to visualize what you're doing so you can actually see the running code in more detail. We have that log on the right-hand side. But it'd be really nice if the code was animating, explaining what it's doing in a real sense. It'd be nice to be able to get people to hook up Sonic Pi applications together in a group setting for bands, but in a distributed setting for collaborative distributed services. It'd be nice to be able, we described earlier, to be able to plug MIDI devices in, so MIDI keyboards, MIDI controllers, and be able to also plug in MIDI sound generators, like you can go and buy a Moog synthesizer, plug that thing in to Sonic Pi and use Sonic Pi to trigger that. That's something it would be nice to be able to do. It'd be nice to be able to hook into the Raspberry Pi GPIO pins to be able to build an instrument by attaching buttons and pressure sensors and to be able to then modify and control the sounds that way. There's lots of things internally that I want to do to make all these things possible that work really well with the concurrency and timing systems that Sonic Pi has. And that's always the sort of main challenge, to make sure things don't just work, but they work well with the timing system. And there's lots of exciting things I'm working on in that kind of vein. As I mentioned before, being able to take a sample and treat it like a palette of drums or a palette of synths. That's something that we're going to add in the next version, which I'm really excited about.
Very cool.
There's always new things. And what I've learned, and obviously, again, ways to make sure that when things go wrong, it does the best job it can to help you understand what went wrong and also hopefully help you understand what you need to do to fix it. So that error reporting is something I'm always constantly working on. And what's really excited me is that tools which I've used or I've built specifically to help children in a classroom have turned into tools which have helped me and other people perform late at night in nightclubs. It turns out that like kind of stressful environment you're in late at night when you're tired, you want something which is actually really quite simple, that when something goes wrong in front of hundreds of people dancing, you can pretty quickly figure out what it is and fix it. And that's exactly the same kind of requirement you have in a school classroom, where when something goes wrong, you want the teacher to be able to figure out what went wrong pretty quickly, or the student themselves or their friends, rather than spending a long time not knowing why it doesn't work. So there's a lot of feature interplay that between its performance requirements and its educational requirements actually that work really well together. And if you even think about it, if you've got a system which is easy to read and easy to understand and easy to learn in a school, that same system is easy for audiences new to live coding to be able to understand what that performance is doing. So when I was recently in the States at Moogfest in North Carolina, I was really amazed when I made the code really simple for periods of time that the audience really sort of focused in.
Because they could grok it, yeah.
They could see the code, yeah. They could read it and understand it, and they can relate to what they could hear, and that they were like hooked. Mm. And I never really thought that people would be that. Some people might be engaged, but actually there was a huge number of people who really were at one with reading the code and hearing the code. And so that's something I think that we need to explore more of.
Yeah, very interesting. There are lots of places for you to get involved if you're watching this. Of course, it all starts at Sam's Sonic Pi page, which is sonic.pi-net. Note, they would like some funding, some contributions to help funding. Are you looking for people to help with coding, to help on the Sonic Pi team? Or
always. We're an open source project. We're always looking for people to help out. We have a core team of people who are regular contributors. We're always looking to expand that. And we're looking not just for coders, we're looking for designers, we're looking for people who understand communities. So if you're interested in our sort of general mission, which is to lower the barrier to entry for a creative experience of code with music and code, then we're really interested in hearing what you have to say and how you might be able to help out. So it's not just, we're not just looking for coders, we're looking for interested people.
Yeah, as with any open source project, it's tech writers, it's designers, just all sorts of things.
Translators are something we're looking for at the moment as well. Right.
Do you have it localized at all?
Yeah, we are massively localized. So the GUI, we already have translated to many different languages already. Nice. And the tutorial, which you've mentioned, is quite a lengthy thing. Mm-hmm. It has been started to be translated to 12 languages at the moment, and I think completed in about 3. And so on that README, there's a link to reading about how you can get involved in the translation effort. So if you want to see Sonic Pi's tutorial in Japanese or in Portuguese or French, then and it's not completed, then please do help out. And you can see there the percentages of where we are with the various languages.
Somebody did it 100% in Finnish.
Yeah. So this is something that's an ongoing thing. Obviously, as Sonic Pi changes, we add new things, we change the documentation. These numbers then go down and then need to be sort of tweaked and fixed. So there's an ongoing requirement. So it's not just we're looking for one person to translate everything. We're looking for a number of people who want just to help out here and there, half an hour here, 10 minutes there, just do a few translations. And then hopefully if enough people do that, then we'll be able to fully translate to all the languages that people care about Sonic Pi being in, which hopefully is every language.
Nice, nice. Of course, you can also, there's a lot more about Sam you can do online, including his live coding sessions that you can watch at livecoding.tv/SamAaron. He has YouTube videos too, so of performances.
Yeah, these are the ones I sort of pick out as being the ones I think are more like exemplary sort of things I'm happy with.
Good.
I put onto YouTube.
Right. So if you, I think it's kind of fun to watch somebody live coding, but if you want kind of the best of, youtube.com/Sam Aaron. And don't forget the Pi Academy if you're a teacher, because you can get free help in creating a curriculum and learning how to teach this stuff.
And also that website there, the Raspberry Pi website, is full of fabulous teaching materials for not just for Sonic Pi, for a whole range of different ways to engage children in computer science. So that's the Raspberry Pi website is a fabulous resource for teachers in general.
Yeah, $35, and you can use old monitors and keyboards and mice, and suddenly the kids have an amazing tool for learning everything. This I didn't ask you. It's not Ruby exactly that you're coding in Sonic Pi. It's its own language.
It's like it's what we call a domain-specific language.
Right.
So there are two main kinds of these things: internal DSLs and external DSLs. External ones are where you write your own parser. You're really creating your own sort of little language. And internal DSLs, domain-specific languages, are ones where you take a current language and you sort of treat it like clay and you manipulate it into what you want it to be. And so Sonic Pi uses Ruby as its host language, just like Ruby on Rails uses Ruby as its host language, but then provides tools on top which allow you to then turn that language into something else. So Ruby on Rails turns Ruby into a configuration language for websites, and Sonic Pi turns Ruby into a system for live coding music. Which means that there are some differences. And so, for example, the sleep command in Sonic Pi isn't the traditional Ruby sleep. Because it can't be. Ruby's sleep doesn't really care about timing in the same way that music cares about it. And in traditional programming languages, when you say sleep one, it really means sleep for at least 1 second. Could be more. and also, if I do action A, action B, sleep one, then by the time I get to the next line, the amount of time that's passed is the time for execution A, time for executing B, and the time extra on the 1 second before the scheduler picks up. And these times accrue over...
No good for music.
So you have a loop.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have what we call drift.
Yeah.
And so Sonic Pi overrides sleep to implement all this fancy logic that I could spend hours talking about and have written academic papers to describe it. But really, it just basically makes it work well in terms of time. You don't need to care about it too much.
Everybody, please help. Make this, get every school in the nation teaching this stuff. It's fabulous. Sonic-Pi.net. Sam, it's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm so enthused about what you're doing. It makes such a difference.
I hope people, they might have seen just the very basics of what you can do here, but go and have a look at those videos. Go and look and see what other people are doing. Check out toplap.org to see what other live coding software is available and the kind of things that people are doing in other systems, which is just really a diverse set of fabulous things. And really, this is not necessarily what I'm doing is because I like making music and I think that music is a fabulous tool for engaging children and everybody in programming, but music might not be for you.
Yeah.
It could be for everybody. There's many other ways we can use code creatively that we can go and find out. So tools like processing to do visuals. So it's really about finding engaging ways to get excited about creative applications of code.
I love this whole thing. This might be a new performance medium, live coding. I love that idea.
It is a new performance medium. In fact, it's the Rolling Stone a month ago, and they said that transcends the present. So this it could be interesting. It really, there are some exemplary cases where live coding has made a dramatic impact in the music scene.
Sam Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on Triangulation. We're watching and listening to Transmission, which is on YouTube, a live performance in Sonic Pi. That's Sam Aaron at the keyboard, and I mean literally the QWERTY keyboard. We do Triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to join us live and in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, I've been getting great help from the audience today, links and more. Thank you. But if you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video, always available after the fact at twit.tv/TRI or wherever your favorite podcasts are stored. iTunes works. We've got Twit apps on every platform. Just find it and subscribe because you don't want to miss an episode. We'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye. This is good. This is great. Where did you do this?
So that's there's two things. The photo is actually just south of Cambridge. I cycled to it. So there's beautiful radio telescopes.
Oh, I see the telescopes. Yeah.
So I took a photo in the cornfields, which are probably now harvested. And then that's superimposed over the code, which you can see, which is a screen grab of the code. And then the background is me performing in my living room on top of an ironing board with a projector projecting the visuals, which is, there's a link to it, I can't remember, electricsheep.org.
Yeah, Electric Sheep. Yeah, that's the greatest. Yeah.
Some filters to make it all pink.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. And I'll fade you in a little bit, so now we see you as well. Sam, what a pleasure. I am just so excited about this. This is really, really cool. I thank you so much for taking time to join us today.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Sam. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.